Truth Espresso, episode 284.
Face it, we all would rather sleep in this morning. That's why God gave us espresso, to kickstart our zombified corpses into hyperdrive. And now, giving your mind and soul the morning shot of truth it craves. This is Truth Espresso with Daniel Minnick.
Hello there, friends, family, and of course, foes and lurkers alike. This is your host, Daniel Minnick, and I have with me once again my sweet, beautiful wife and co-host, Chelsea, and we are going to talk about a topic we talk about a lot on Truth Espresso, but this is a different area of the topic of abortion. And so, sweetheart, what happened recently in the state of Alabama that kind of makes it almost on the other end of the spectrum from the state of like Colorado or California or New York?
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. So this kind of the last couple of weeks here, we've seen some court decisions come in through the state of Alabama in regards to in vitro fertilization. And that's what we're going to be talking about during this episode, is just a specific case that came out on February 20th, which was entitled the James LePage et al. Versus the Center for Reproductive Medicine and Mobile Infirmary Association. So this will be an interesting episode talking about the early stages of development, and what this case is presenting are these early embryos in vitro fertilization, human beings, and do they deserve protection versus they're not human beings and we can do with what we want with those. So we'll see how this case kind of came to their arguments and kind of what our take is on this topic as well.
So on the flip side, we're, say, the state of Colorado, we had some episodes covering the Reproductive Health Equity Act in 2022 that specifically stated that the unborn had no rights at all. And now in Alabama, it's all about, given that the unborn child is considered a person or a child in the state, then does that cover all cases of pre-birth children, including embryos that aren't even inside a mother? The state of Alabama is on the other side, kind of the opposite end of the spectrum here. And this particular case, it's not even talking about abortion per se, but of course it has ramifications for abortion or any procedures that would result in effectually abortions.
So I have a question about this, because the case isn't specifically about abortion, but it is about defining human life, when life begins. If life begins at conception, then that life should be valued and protected. That's what we argue in abortion cases too, that life begins at conception and they're valuable and they deserve protection. So this is kind of the same thing. We're just not talking about actual abortion procedures or the intentional killing some of the time. So it does definitely get really sticky with this topic. And that's kind of where we'll kind of navigate through our way in this case here. Okay, so my question is for you. What are your thoughts on when life begins?
Well, I guess I take the 100% pro-life, abolitionist, whatever definition that life begins at conception or fertilization.
Good job. You passed the test.
Which I think we've made that clear in Truth Espresso episodes in the past.
Just since we're exploring new grounds, making that clear in this episode.
Yeah, so if life begins at conception, it's possible in modern technology to have human life that has gone just beyond conception and not be inside a mother's womb. And then that ends up causing cases like this, the LePage versus the Center for Reproductive Medicine case. And it was decided on February 20th of 2024. And there are several justices in it, but Justice J. Mitchell wrote the official opinion of the court. Chief Justice Tom Parker wrote a concurring opinion. Some other justices wrote a short concurring opinion, but Chief Justice Tom Parker's concurring opinion, even though it wasn't the official opinion, it was the major concurring opinion, that seems to get the most focus from critics of the ruling here because of the statements he made in his concurring opinion, which we'll look at some of those and see from a Christian perspective. It's quite a read to see that in a court legal document. And so, according to the court opinion by Justice Mitchell, so initially it starts to explain what the case is about, what happened, and what led to the ruling. This case was about three couples who had kept frozen embryos through in vitro fertilization at the Center for Reproductive Medicine in Alabama. What the ruling refers to as the cryogenic nursery. This Center for Reproductive Medicine was contained in a hospital called the Mobile Infirmary Medical Center. Now, Mobile as in Mobile, Alabama, not that this hospital is on wheels and can be transported, but so at the Mobile, Alabama Infirmary Medical Center, three different couples brought this case against this in vitro clinic. And so why did they bring a case against this clinic? Sweetheart, you want to talk about that?
Sure. It's kind of an odd case to read through. But in 2020, there's a patient at the hospital who managed to sneak into the nursery. We're not sure if that was intentional or not. Anyways, this person tried to grab a container of frozen embryos, and they're contained in these steel negative freezing containers. So it's kind of interesting this person knew to look in there. The patient, of course, tries to grab some of the embryos, and with those freezing cold temperatures, burns his hand and ends up dropping the containers of these embryos. And unfortunately, the embryos ended up passing away from that experience. The first two couples found out about this. They sue the clinic, and then the third couple eventually jumps on board and sues the clinic too. So both of these suits, I guess there are two separate ones, were trying to hold the clinic liable under the Alabama's 1872 Wrongful Death of a Minor Act. And this act has to do with the indirect death of a minor child by a, quote, wrongful act, omission, or negligence, unquote.
So in this case, it's not even talking about murder, premeditated murder, first, second, or third degree murder, anything. So a wrongful act could be like you do some kind of act, even if it's not with the intention of killing a minor child, or maybe someone gets angry and does something and oops, it accidentally resulted in the death. Or if by an act of omission, like say, you know, you refused appropriate care or something and it resulted in the death of a minor, or by negligence. So somehow this particular act is a civil penalty act to recognize there has to be some kind of penalty for damages ensued or whatever. Like, yeah, you didn't intend to murder someone, but you did the wrong thing and it resulted in the death of a minor child. So it's not going to be the same penalty of murder, but you have to have some penalty so that there's deterrence for negligence or any kind of act of outrage or anger that unintentionally ends up leading to the death of a minor child. So that somewhat seemed to fit with what happened here. Like, now the clinic didn't intend to have these embryos destroyed. It was like negligence or something on their part that allowed this patient to wander into the cryogenic nursery and try to steal some embryos. Who knows what, sleepwalking, or if it was a mental patient somehow that was like, ooh, let me see if I can, you know, get myself pregnant somehow. I don't know. But whatever the case, it's like the clinic needs to be held liable because they didn't have their security up to par there. Or whatever the case, there were parents who had frozen embryos there with the intention of at some point having them implanted so that they could have a child. And now they're deprived of those embryos. They're deprived. Their frozen children, embryos, were killed in this process. No one intended it to happen, but the parents need some form of justice in this case, that they entrusted the care of their children to this clinic, and that the clinic, through negligence or of some form, lost their children. And so, therefore, the patient sued the clinic for that and believed they were entitled to some kind of damages under this wrongful death of a minor act. The clinic, on their part, in their defense, in the original trial, argued that the embryos, quote, do not fit within the definition of, unquote, the word person or the word child according to that act, and that therefore the act does not cover the loss of the embryos. And the lower circuit court in Mobile, Alabama, ruled in favor of the clinic in that regard. Now, they didn't fully rule in favor of the clinic. They basically threw out most of the complaint from the plaintiffs, but then just upheld basically emotional trauma or like damages for that kind of thing, but not under the wrongful death of a minor act or some of the other complaints that they raised. So it was kind of like minimal things that they upheld. But it obviously wasn't enough for these plaintiffs, and so they appealed to the final conclusion of the lower circuit trial, and then ultimately went to the Alabama Supreme Court that ended up reversing the trial's dismissal of those particular complaints. Sweetheart, what did the Alabama Supreme Court rule in this case in favor of the plaintiffs and reversing the lower circuit trial court?
Yes, this was pretty amazing that the Alabama Supreme Court came to this conclusion, but yeah, a huge victory to consider these frozen embryos as humans. So their conclusion was that frozen embryos could be classified as children and covered under the wrongful death of a minor act. So here's a part of a quote from their final ruling. It says, quote, "The relevant statutory text is clear. The wrongful death of a minor act applies on its face to all unborn children without limitation," unquote.
For being, you know, 100% pro-life, it's refreshing to see justices actually state that we're not talking about after 6 weeks or after 15 weeks or after viability or except in the cases of rape or incest and stuff like that. It's just like all unborn children are children or persons without limitation. It's very refreshing to see a state like that. It's kind of like, whoa, you go, Alabama.
But it is interesting because there was a lot of uprising from pro-life people that were very frustrated with this ruling. And of course, some pro-abortion people as well that were not happy with this ruling too. So it's interesting that you'd think with this being a conservative, very pro-life conclusion in this case that you would get a lot of support from the pro-life groups, but there was quite a bit of kickback with that. It's interesting.
Somehow I have to think that there are a lot of pro-life people who just don't know much about in vitro fertilization, so they might get confused about it. Now, I'm sure there are some that maybe they're not 100% pro-life, and so they're thinking of, this is going to shock legitimate industry medical practices, and some parents who desperately want children, you know, will be deprived of an option to give them children, which we could talk about later, about the questions that IVF raises and the ethical considerations with that as to why this is an issue. So the official opinion does continue. Another snippet I got that says, Quote, the plaintiffs, for their part, argue that the proposed exception for extrauterine children would introduce discontinuity within Alabama law, unquote. So the discontinuity, according to the official opinion of the court here by Justice Mitchell, the plaintiffs argued, and he is agreeing with, that, well, we all agree, you know, as it's stated in the court opinions and concurring opinions, that even the clinic itself agreed with the sanctity of life of the unborn. You know, everyone was agreeing to that statement. Now, obviously, the clinic, they're going to want to defend against penalties on their part. No one wants to have to bear the burden of guilt and with something they didn't even intend to happen and whatever. So, like, we can understand that from the clinic's perspective, but the clinic trying to argue that the frozen embryo shouldn't be treated as children or persons under the current statutes to avoid the guilt of it, like, well, yeah, sorry about that, but to treat unborn children inside a mother in one way and unborn children, in the case of IVF, as frozen embryos outside of a mother, they're all unborn children. But to treat one case as protected under the sanctity of life statutes and another as not, the court here is recognizing that's not really consistent. There's a discontinuity being introduced there.
Striving for Eternity is a Christ-centered ministry focused on equipping people for eternity, and they provide speakers and seminars that come to your church with expertise in theology, hermeneutics, world religions, creation science, evangelism, presuppositional apologetics, church history, and expertise in sexual abuse in the church. For details on their seminars and to request a speaker for your church, go to strivingforeternity.org. Striving to make today an eternal day for the glory of God.
What would be some of the consequences kind of following that trail? And it seems like they kind of addressed this a little bit in their opinion as well. If we follow that logic down, I mean, I know we recently talked about partial birth abortion. So how does this bring in some of that kind of gray area?
The plaintiffs, the three couples in this case, argued, and the judge concurred that, well, if there is a discontinuity between unborn children in utero, in the womb, and unborn children outside the womb, such as frozen embryos, if we're to interpret both the statute and court rulings saying that unborn children are covered under the statutes, but if we're to introduce a discontinuity to say unborn children only mean those who are in utero and not ex utero, I guess, or outside, extra uterine, as the court says, if that's how we treat the language, then could somehow a partial birth death situation, or maybe some act that someone could get away with being an indirect demise of the child partially born, a partial birth indirect abortion, I guess, I don't know, but somehow, okay, in utero, well, that can't cover if they're halfway outside the birth canal, and oh, born, well, it's not fully born yet, so we have some kind of gray area there. And if unborn child is only in utero, then if someone were to kill a child indirectly, whatever, could that child's death not be covered under the wrongful death of a minor act if it's interpreted according to precedent and case law as only in utero and born? That was the question the plaintiffs raised, like, wait a minute, that's kind of weird. So the child would be covered. It would be a wrongful death of a minor if it's in utero or if it's born, but not during that short period in between, you know, during the birth process, halfway born, you know. That doesn't make sense. See, this is what discontinuity causes. It causes gray areas and loopholes, and the judge concurred that that's not reasonable.
That's why it's important in our definitions or in our understanding of what it means to be pro-life that the human being is not dependent on their size, their location, their level of development, because then that's where you have all these gray areas starting to peek in. It's a human being in the womb. It's a human being in the birth canal. It's a human being outside of the uterus. It's a human being in the frozen containers. So that location of where that human being is does not change or lessen the humanness of it or the personhood of it. And that's where it helps when you're thinking about your position as a pro-life person that you understand that location doesn't change humanity.
And the plant has also brought up, hey, it's not just Alabama law, it's the United States Constitution. Now, of course, other states, Colorado, are not going to interpret the 14th Amendment this way, but the Equal Protection Clause, equal protection under the law, the plaintiffs argued and the judge concurred that if we're understanding that the unborn, whether in utero or extrauterine, are persons and children just as much as those who are born outside the womb after birth are covered under the law, then the equal protection under the law would then apply to all humans, including frozen embryos, else there would be a discontinuity there. The judge also argued that because the Alabama Supreme Court ruled in a case in Alabama, Mack versus Carmack, back in 2011, that unborn children were covered under the Wrongful Death of a Minor Act. So that's when the 1872 statute was tested in court concerning unborn children. And Mack versus Carmack in 2011 ruled that unborn children are also considered child, minor child, person for the purposes of that statute. Then it covers unborn children. And so now this judge then ruled that there be no discontinuity between extrauterine and in utero human beings, that therefore, since unborn children in 2011 were covered under the Wrongful Death of a Minor Act, then naturally cryogenically frozen embryos in an IVF clinic would also have to be covered under that statute. The judge also said, quote, nothing about the act narrows the definition of child to unborn children who are physically in utero. So since the statute doesn't specifically say in utero as opposed to out of utero, it doesn't limit it to that. Then the judge continues, instead, the act provides a cause of action for the death of any minor child without exception or limitation, unquote. So therefore, you know, to be consistent, the act must include frozen embryos. And we'll provide a link in the show notes to the statute there, Alabama Code 65391. And also provide a link to the Alabama Supreme Court ruling for this case so you can read it for yourself and see some of the parts that we quoted from. So that was parts of the official ruling. But then what's even more, I think, also cool, very shocking in a way, according to today's standards and stuff, the Chief Justice Tom Parker also wrote a large concurring opinion, and he seemed to go even farther in arguing for the sanctity of life here and demonstrating his faith in his ruling there. Sweetheart, do you want to read a quote or two from Chief Justice Tom Parker's concurring opinion?
Sure. Yeah, it's hard to limit what all you want to read, because the whole thing is just amazing. It's like, wow, thank you, God, for putting people in places that are willing to proclaim truth and speak up for life. So Chief Justice Tom Parker wrote, quote, the common usage of this phrase, sanctity of life, has continued into the 21st century, referring to the view that all human beings bear God's image from the moment of conception, end quote. And then another segment that was really...
So he believes that life begins at conception.
Yeah.
And not only that, from a secular viewpoint, but he mentioned that human beings bear God's image in a legal ruling. That's just the beginning.
So another quote that he had written was, begin, quote, man's creation in God's image is the basis of the general prohibition on the intentional taking of human life. See Genesis 9:6 in the King James, where it says, whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. end quote.
Chief Justice Tom Parker of the Alabama State Supreme Court dared to quote from the Bible to defend the viewpoint that humans should not be killed and that life begins at conception, that we bear the image of God. He's quoting the verse there that says, "For in the image of God made he man." Well, that's pretty shocking for a court opinion here.
Well, that verse is so deep too, because the first part's like, "Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed." I mean, that has to be scary if you're thinking of, okay, if I kill this innocent baby through these procedures, then this verse is saying like, oh, I should be put to death because I took someone's life. So it's just interesting like how much depth is in that entire verse there.
And he also went further. He quoted more from the Bible, too. So he also says, quote, "Finally, the doctrine of the sanctity of life is rooted in the sixth commandment, you shall not murder, Exodus 20, verse 13, NKJV 1982, unquote. So quoting from the Bible there, referencing the sixth commandment. It seems like Chief Justice Tom Parker here is treating the Bible as if it were case law. Imagine that. Because our laws originally in the states, in the United States, were based on the Bible. So the Bible is properly case law for United States and state statutes there. So Chief Justice Tom Parker gets it. You can quote from the Bible as case law. He also, later on in his concurring opinion, said, quote, "In summary, the theologically based view of the sanctity of life adopted by the people of Alabama encompasses the following. 1. God made every person in his image. 2. Each person, therefore, has a value that far exceeds the ability of human beings to calculate. And 3. Human life cannot be wrongfully destroyed without incurring the wrath of a holy God, who views the destruction of his image as an affront to himself. Section 3606 of the Alabama Code recognizes that this is true of unborn human life no less than it is of all other human life, that even before birth, all human beings bear the image of God, and their lives cannot be destroyed without effacing his glory," unquote. Whoa, I mean, this sounds like something that you might have seen, say, in an Alabama court ruling like 200 years ago. Things that come from somewhat distant history here, and we're seeing that in 2024. Sweetheart, you want to give the next quote from Chief Justice Tom Parker?
Sure. So this quote starts with, "The people of Alabama have declared the public policy of this state to be that unborn human life is sacred. We believe that each human being, from the moment of conception, is made in the image of God, created by him to reflect his likeness. It is as if the people of Alabama took what was spoken of the prophet Jeremiah and applied it to every unborn person in this state." And then he quotes Jeremiah, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you." That's Jeremiah 1:5 from the New King James Version in 1982, end quote.
Whoa, more quotes from the Bible, and he's attributing that to the people of Alabama because they voted for, I think it was a state amendment that declared that unborn children were the sanctity of life there. The people of Alabama entrusted the three branches of the state government to affirm the sanctity of life, and that even Jeremiah 1:5 references the sanctity of human life, and that's another quote from the Bible. Now, he also appeals to theologians in history as they interpreted the Bible, too. So, if you read through Parker's concurring opinion, he also has quotes from Thomas Aquinas's Summa Theologica and John Calvin's Institutes of the Christian Religion and the 2009 Manhattan Declaration, which that's a pretty solid statement of faith signed by a bunch of Christian leaders that talk about the sanctity of life, the sanctity of marriage, avoiding the culture of divorce and unfaithfulness and moral purity is a very fundamental type statement of faith. And he quoted from it in this concurring opinion here. So his concurring opinions very staunchly biblically based and pro-fundamental Christian beliefs. I did see that there are several other concurring justice opinions. They were a little more tame, like, yeah, we get it, we agree with the ruling, but we're not as staunch as these other two here, but they're more like secular opinions, and okay, we have to admit this, but we have hesitations or objections to this type of thing. There was one official dissenting opinion, and probably by, say, Colorado standards, the dissenting opinion here would probably be considered a radical religious freak or something. But the lone dissenting opinion was Justice Cook, but he also noted his, quote, deeply held personal views on the sanctity of life, unquote. But he mostly tried to argue that it was not the role of the court to expand statutes, the interpretation of state statutes. It was the job of the legislature and not the court to amend statutes if further clarity were necessary. So he's basically saying the court should not have ruled the way it did to basically broaden and expand the interpretation of statutes such as the Wrongful Death of a Minor Act, and that if we needed clarification, it was up to legislatures to amend it in the state Congress and not for the court essentially to legislate from the bench. And, like, you know, when you read some of his stuff, you can understand where he's coming from, even if you don't really agree with it. So it's like, yeah, I get what you mean by that, but the concurring opinion, I think, is pretty solid here. Mm-hmm. And the whole problem of the discontinuity there, I think it's a good and necessary inference that unborn in utero, unborn extra uterine, they should be treated the same. So one quote from Justice Cook, he says, "Unless and until the legislature updates Alabama law in such a way that demonstrates that a frozen embryo is a minor child, this court remains bound by the original public meaning of that term as it was understood in 1872 when the legislature passed the Wrongful Death Act," unquote. So, yeah, he's basically trying to say that when the wrongful death of a minor child was written in 1872, we didn't have the kind of medical procedures such as IVF. We probably didn't even have much in the way of understanding at that time of certain abortion procedures. So he's trying to say that it's up to the court to interpret statutes with the intent as they understood what it meant when it was written. And I can understand that. But you can understand, like, if they had written that now, they obviously would have included all civil and biological understanding of a minor child, a person, what have you. Wouldn't Justice Cook then have to argue against the 2011 ruling then in Mack versus Carmack that understood that statute as covering unborn child too? Like, he'd have to say, to be consistent with his argument there, he'd have to roll back all of that. So, sweetheart, what did Justice Cook have to say about what his understanding of the opinion and concurring opinions, would it have a chilling effect on, say, the IVF industry as it was being practiced in the state of Alabama?
Yeah, his conclusion is interesting. So, yeah, I'll just read what his conclusion was. So, beginning in quotes, "The main opinion's holding will mean that the creation of frozen embryos will end in Alabama. There is no doubt that there are many Alabama citizens praying to be parents who will no longer have that opportunity. And there is no doubt that there will be fewer babies born. On the other hand, there are powerful moral and policy arguments supporting the notion that ending the creation, use, and destruction of frozen embryos is a good thing, and that IVF technology has the potential for grave misuse," end quote.
So he's kind of recognizing that at the time of this case and the ruling, there was an active IVF industry. Obviously, the whole case involves the IVF clinic. They were operating and the plaintiffs were suing because they mishandled their children, their embryos there. But the way the ruling would act would almost like well, is that going to even just totally destroy this clinic altogether? The plaintiffs had their children at this clinic. Is this going to even end that industry? And he's raising the question, like, this is going to chill parents who want to have children and they're infertile. They see IVF as the only way that they could have children. They might be deprived of that in the state of Alabama. So, I mean, it seems like he's raising questions like, hold your horses, guys. This is going too far, or at least have you considered this? Now, he does recognize that IVF has its problems. I'm saying that I disagree with him, but I'm also saying I understand his concerns and where he's coming from. And say, by Colorado standards, this judge is very pro-life. That's the ruling there, the dissenting opinion. And of course, like Justice Cook was arguing, that did seem at least the viewpoint of clinics in Alabama. So the University of Alabama at Birmingham, that had their own IVF practice there, said that it would suspend IVF practice with clients until they knew it was safe to do so. So there were probably even parents that had appointments for IVF treatments that then they had to have that suspended indefinitely. And so this wasn't an easy thing that was going to happen with current things happening that had to be frozen, no pun intended there. And the Alabama State House and Senate, out of the concern for that, it's like, well, how do we recognize and not disagree with the way the court ruled? And we recognize that frozen embryos, to be consistent, have to be recognized as children and persons, but can we still have, at least temporarily, some form of, you know, IVF practice? Can we not interrupt this? Can IVF clinics not be chilled? Again, no pun intended, from this ruling. So the Alabama State House and Senate both passed bill proposals to protect medical providers from prosecution for providing IVF treatment itself, not destroying embryos like that patient did in the clinic, but continuing to provide IVF treatment and not being afraid of prosecution for that, while also not challenging the ruling that frozen embryos are children under the state law. And this Wednesday, as of this recording, this Wednesday will be the full vote to pass these measures. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see what happens, what develops. Again, no pun intended, in the state of Alabama. I'm not trying to say jokes, but as I'm using words, they have meanings when it comes to this topic. But it'll be interesting to see what transpires in the state of Alabama with these measures and the challenges that might happen to say, what about IVF? You can't get rid of all IVF because of an accident that happened in an IVF clinic. It's very interesting. But also, as the ruling talked about when it came to IVF, and it talked about the, you know, all humans are created in the image of God, and that God doesn't like it when you destroy image bearers. And so there are challenges, admittedly, with IVF, in vitro fertilization, to a consistent life-affirming position.
Are you living an abundant life? Jesus came to give us eternal life, yes, but also an abundant life here and now, overflowing with the fruit of the Spirit. The Abundant Life Podcast encourages and challenges Christians to spiritual change and growth by applying biblical principles to everyday life. Podcast hosts Sasso Mendez and Ben Ariano discuss various topics that are helpful for Christians and true to the scripture, and bring a generous dose of humor. Visit abundantlife.fm and subscribe to get notified of each new episode. That's abundantlife.fm.
Sweetheart, do you want to talk a little bit about that? Like, what are some challenges to IVF? Is it possible to be consistently pro-life and even allow for IVF? What are some of the ethical, moral concerns that IVF raises? Maybe at least explain what IVF is and the ethical concerns for that.
Well, first of all, infertility is a huge problem, and we keep seeing this increase. I mean, just even in my practice, the rate of infertility is astonishing sometimes. And of course, there are lots of different causes for that and different ways we can help try and restore fertility back for both men and women. So in vitro fertilization is a procedure where they give the mom medications to have her ovaries produce and grow as many eggs at one time as possible. And then they go in and they call it harvest, but they collect all the eggs that have been produced. And then they collect sperm from the dad. And then in these petri dishes, they inject the sperm into the ovum directly. And then they let this develop until a certain stage of development. If I'm remembering correctly, it was at the blastocyst development. And then they go ahead and implant that into the uterus. And they have to do hormone support for mom to try and hopefully help maintain that pregnancy. And the baby will continue to develop and eventually be born, which is amazing that we have this kind of technology. But again, there's a lot of ethical issues that come up with this because we are kind of intervening, or it's kind of the idea when you can get like a lot of information, but sometimes that's not always a good thing. So doing the in vitro like this inside a petri dish, it allows the doctors to obtain DNA material from the embryo so they can look at chromosome problems or potential genetic issues that might come up. They can also see genders of the baby. So one ethical issue is if parents are able to have other kids before and they were only having boys and now they really want a girl, so then the doctor only implants the girl embryo that was developing and then they discard the male embryos. And that's not really ethical to do that, but there's some practices that do that. Gender selection is what that's referred to. Also, knowing if there's going to be a genetic or chromosome problem, I mean, it's not totally guaranteed at that stage, but if it's looking that way, then they'll go ahead and disregard those embryos as well. And then some of the embryos, because they collect so many and they start developing so many embryos, then some of them will be implanted into the mom. Some of them will be frozen. Some of them can be used for experimentation. Some of them can be just discarded. And the issue with some of that is that, okay, these are human beings at this point because they've been fertilized. They're developing. So discarding them is ending the life of that. Experimenting on them is ending the life of that embryo. And then discarding them based on if there might be a problem with the baby or gender selection, then those are other means of killing off these human beings as well.
So IVF can be used for like eugenics purposes and stuff like that. Yes. Yep.
So I know that I have met some pro-life fertility doctors that practice this with good ethical parameters. So for example, so they'll collect the eggs from the mom, and when they look at the structure and integrity of the eggs and be like, okay, these ones look like they would be really good, then at that point, they get rid of the eggs that look like this one's not as big or this one's misshaped.
And they're not fertilized at that point, so it's not a human being at that point.
Yeah, so then they can eliminate those, and then the parents and the doctors say, how many of these babies do you want implanted? That's how many we're going to fertilize. So if you only want two babies in there, then you only fertilize the two babies and you implant them. And hopefully one or both will actually continue to develop once they're in utero. So that's one of the other issues, is that sometimes that implantation part, once you transfer them in utero, that sometimes they don't always make it. So then it's like, okay, now you have to pay to go through more treatments and the process of that again, because you only decided to have two and the two implanted and they didn't continue to develop. So
yeah,
there's a lot to it. It's not the simple, straightforward answer, except that you know that it's a human life and that we're not going to intentionally destroy that human life. And so there are, thankfully, like good pro-life fertility doctors out there that try and practice within these parameters of protecting life and also helping these couples that have come into this phase of infertility and desiring to have children. It's interesting and complex, but
Yeah, that was one question that I was going to ask, since you knew more about this, was like, is it possible to have a consistent pro-life version of IVF that respects human life, doesn't discard embryos? It's like, is there a way to do that to help infertile couples without throwing away human embryos? Yeah. And I guess there is some way to do that. It's not like you have to be against IVF just because it's a freaky technological thing, but primarily only if it's used to create and destroy human embryos. And there's a way to do it without creating and destroying human embryos.
And there's a lot of different techniques that you can use for infertility. So in vitro fertilization is one of the more expensive ones as well. And I mean, I don't know if I should recommend it, but just like from a pro-life position, most likely that would be more of a last resort, I would say. Like trying other things first that wouldn't involve so much more ethical issues that come up. I mean, wasn't it? I mean, I feel like it was in the last 3 years at least where there was that doctor who was caught in one of the northern states because he ran a fertility clinic and he was actually impregnating the ovums with his own sperm and not the sperm of the actual dad in the scenarios. And then he ended up getting caught. So there's a lot of, again, like with this amazing ability to do this, there's also that room for abusing that and harming people and harming these babies. So you have to take it with a lot of conviction in how you value life, I think.
Yeah, as you said, a last resort and pro-life, life-affirming version of IVF, if possible, if you have to resort to that. And of course, there's also, I know it's hard to pitch this because there are people who are desperate for their own biological children, but to respect life, if you can't have a life-affirming option, if IVF would end up destroying embryos, then one option is adoption. Recognizing, like we see in the Bible, sometimes God can shut a womb. And so like to recognize God can do that to some people and to respect life, one option for some couples, if they're respecting the image of God, to adopt some children rather than pick an option that ends up destroying human beings.
And there's this really cool way you can do that is with snowflake adoption, where there are, I don't remember the last count, there's like definitely millions of frozen embryos that are just left there because the parents like, oh, we already have two kids. We're not going to have any more. So we have all these frozen embryos. And then it's like, what do we do with them? And so there's quite a few groups that you can actually adopt a frozen embryo. So if the issue is with poor egg quality or poor sperm quality, or you had to go through radiation and cancer treatment and you aren't able to produce eggs, well, you can try the adopting a frozen embryo too, which is a pretty amazing way to go through the adoption process as well.
And saying like, yeah, the frozen embryo thing of itself, there's that ethical concern even with that. But to counterbalance that, adopt one of them, allow it to continue life rather than be frozen. That's one option there. Take something that's kind of like a little bit iffy there and reduce the number of frozen embryos by adopting, if that's an option there, you know. As I said, you know, when it comes to IVF, when all is said and done, regardless of what has happened and what ethical problems have happened, we can't look at any child who was conceived, implanted, and born through IVF as anything less than, of course, an image bearer of God, worthy of all respect. We can't just say, oh, you were born through IVF, you're an illegitimate child, and so you don't deserve the respect. No, of course, just as much as any other child. Two things can be true at the same time. One, we can have ethical concerns with IVF, as is often practiced with destroying embryos, and at the same time, recognize that all life is precious, and so even a child conceived by a careless IVF procedure, they're just as much valued as anyone else.
Thanks for having this discussion and going through this crazy, windy scenario with this case. And I mean, it's so neat to see how we hear these different people in the court system or just around the world that are being brave and standing up and proclaiming truth and God's word and even in the justice system. So it's really neat.
I think it was really cool to read this case. The opinions there were a breath of fresh air, especially in this state, you know, to read life-affirming rulings, especially one that would quote from the Bible and argue that we're made in the image of God as a legal precedent and case law. And so I want to applaud Alabama for this. Now, we also pray for God's working and clearing up any misunderstandings or any issues that happen with IVF as a result of this, and that God's will be done for the greatest life-affirming result as of this ruling. Pray that God protects them from attacks from the pro-abortion lobby or anyone else there. And I hope that you enjoyed this episode of Truthspresso and continue to listen to Truthspresso as you stay tuned for the next one. And God bless.
Thank you for waking up with Truthspresso. Good morning, and God bless your day.
Hey friends, Daniel Minnick here again. If you liked waking up to this episode of Truthspresso, I would really appreciate it if you would rate it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever application you use to listen to Truthspresso.